The former Facebook employee criticized the company in testimony before Congress yesterday, and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle said they agreed about the need to regulate social media companies. Here's Democratic U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal talking about that bipartisanship at a press conference after the hearing yesterday.
If you closed your eyes without knowing who was talking, you wouldn't know whether it was a Republican or Democrat. You wouldn't know what part of the country they were from, because everywhere, red state, blue state, east and west, every part of the country has the harms that are inflicted by Facebook and Instagram.
It's a week in Washington. We'll talk about the possibility of regulation for social media companies and more. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more regulations for companies like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter? Do you feel like you see too much angry, hateful content? According to that whistleblower, that's the plan in the algorithms that send us content on social media. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a political correspondent for The Guardian U.S. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we had this former Facebook employee, Frances Haugen, the whistleblower who released a lot of information to the Wall Street Journal, testifying there. What was it about her testimony that caught the attention of Democrats and Republicans here?
I think it was a couple of things. First and foremost, she brought forward a lot of documents. She turned over troves and troves of internal Facebook documents that will be critical both to senators and the public to sort of understand what is happening inside of Facebook. That's a very, very rare look. Typically, when the heads of big tech companies, and of course, and Facebook in particular, when they come before these panels, they're very circumspect. They're very on message. They often, you know, tell senators, "We'll get back to you," and that's kind of the eye-rolling response that they get. And here you have someone who came forward, sort of brought the receipts, as they say, and was very clear in what she thought needed to be done to maybe fix Facebook. She was open that she wants the company to succeed. She actually doesn't believe in breaking up Facebook, but she did have some ideas on how Congress and might regulate this tech giant, and she brought some solutions as well as evidence that the members of the panel can use to come up with maybe some legislation or regulation.
And this is different than usual. Sometimes we get Democrats unhappy about kind of a monopoly position of social media companies or about amplification of conservative groups or these troll farms from Eastern Europe that promote conservative ideas. Mm-hmm. Republicans upset sometimes about former President Trump being banned from platforms, they say, for violating terms of services. It seems like Republicans and Democrats might agree on this thing where algorithms are pushing divisive messages. They both seem to be kind of unhappy about that. Is that what you were seeing?
Absolutely. They seem to really be on the same page for a change. We exactly as you say, often these hearings are about scoring political points or making a political point. And this was very different. There was talk about what they can do with these algorithms, whether, you know, what kind of legislation or perhaps an outside oversight body that might be able to regulate these algorithms and how they amplify. One example is these harmful messages for teenage girls. And so I think, you know, it was much more solutions oriented, and it did seem like a very rare thing for Washington. Senators from both parties were on the same page about this, and there seemed to be a real sense of urgency that they need to act and that that Congress has to do something. As a caveat, they do say this every time there's a big hearing. But this did seem different because I think now they're getting some of that information that they hadn't been able to get from the company itself. And that is going to inform, I think, how they go forward. And they've also made it clear that they want her to continue testifying before other committees. So we'll hear more from her.
Talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian U.S., looking at some of the top stories in national politics, including this testimony yesterday from a former Facebook employee, a whistleblower. and some bipartisan calls for more regulation by Congress of Facebook and other big social media platforms. You can join in with your thoughts on that if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Do you see what the whistleblower was talking about? A lot of divisive messages popping up in your various social media feeds. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You said more hearings scheduled, Lauren. What kind of timeline are we seeing for hearing more from this whistleblower, maybe bringing in social media companies themselves for more talks, and then maybe that leading to legislation? How long would that take?
Well, the timeline, I won't even guess at the timeline for all of this. But I don't know if there's been a hearing actually scheduled, but they did. Other committee chairs have said they'd like to hear from her. You know, interestingly, Adam Schiff, who is with the Intelligence Committee, and he is looking at the January 6th attack on the Capitol. He said that some of these documents might be able to help them with their investigation, to help further the look into the Capitol riots. So there's a lot of ramifications of this. Of her testimony and the documents that she brought forward. We're also hearing from lawmakers saying they want to hear directly from Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook has really pushed back very strongly against some of this testimony, saying that she's mischaracterizing their algorithm, that she didn't have a good view of how the algorithm worked from her position at Facebook. And so I think the lawmakers want to hear what Mark Zuckerberg has to say, and of course they really want to press him to you know, explain himself, because obviously these documents are pretty shocking. Some of the things that she alleged is pretty shocking. So you know, the lawmakers are calling this the big tobacco moment, and I guess we'll see if that's true. We'll see if this truly is a turning point and they're able to come together and pass legislation that does regulate Facebook and other tech companies. But I think it's a very big question mark.
We're going to talk more about this on Friday, especially as it relates to the flow of misinformation in American politics. Now, Lauren, I want to move on to the debt ceiling. Once again, we are approaching this debt default if Congress doesn't raise the debt limits. Another game of chicken here. Some developments today. What is going on?
Yes, we are dangerously close to this sort of deadline of when we could default or not be able to pay to borrow and make good on our debt. But today, Mitch McConnell has put forward an offer to Democrats. So the context is Republicans have been actually blocking Democratic attempts to raise or suspend the debt limit. And that's because they think Democrats who control both chambers of Congress and the White House, they should be able to do this on their own. Now, in the Senate, you need 60 votes because of this filibuster. And so Republicans it's evenly divided, 50-50, Republicans have not been giving Democrats those 10 votes. They've been denying every effort by the Democrats to pass legislation. Their position is that Democrats should use a special budgetary process to raise the debt limit on their own. The Democrats say that takes far too long and it's a risky process. They'd rather do it just with majority vote. Today, we saw Mitch McConnell offer Chuck Schumer sort of a way out, a way to raise the debt limit. And he gave him two options. One is to raise the debt limit through December. The other is to use this budgetary process known as reconciliation. And he said that Republicans wouldn't make that as long and painful of a process as they could. So it's unclear. I think as of right now, these negotiations are truly ongoing as we're speaking. But there does seem to finally be some movement forward. And you can now start to see that there will likely be a path to avoiding a debt default.
We're talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent with The Guardian U.S. She's with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, infrastructure plans. Some Democrats saying, okay, the $3.5 trillion over 10 years, maybe that needs to be smaller. good idea, or do you want to get rid of it completely or go big? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Also coming up, we'll look at the politics of abortion leading into the midterm elections. Is this a big voting issue for you? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our look at some of the top stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian US. You can join in with your thoughts on the ongoing infrastructure saga. Do you want to see something passed, something big, something smaller? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Also coming up, the politics of abortion in the upcoming elections after a law in Texas, another one making its way through the courts from Mississippi. Will this be a big voting issue for you coming up next year? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Lauren, the debt ceiling we just talked about, also in the midst of all of this, negotiations over the two separate infrastructure bills, the big one with a lot of social safety net stuff could get smaller, it sounds like. What is the talk there?
We actually heard President Biden say yesterday that it almost certainly will get smaller. That's what he's telling members of his party. And he, you know, right now he's just trying to bring, he's trying to find a sweet spot where he can get all of these different Democrats on the same page. You know, he has said, he's been pretty upfront about the numbers. He has 48 votes in the Senate right now, and he needs 50. There are two holdouts who are just not happy with the size of the package. And so a lot of the negotiations are around what these two senators, Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Senators Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. So it's what they want. They're also having to deal with some dynamics in the House. There's a group of moderates that were pretty upset that the House didn't end up having this vote on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. They were hoping to have that done and sent to the president's desk for a vote before the end of the month. And here we are still negotiating. So, you know, Biden took the show on the road yesterday. He went to Michigan and he's really trying to sell this agenda. He's trying to tell the public, you know, what's actually in the bill. We come to call the bill the $3.5 trillion. Clearly, it's not going to be $3.5 trillion. They're going to negotiate it down. And so he's trying to remind voters, this is actually what's in it. This is what, you know, what the trillions and trillions of dollars are actually going to be spent on, and really build support from the public and from the outside.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Monticello. John, hi.
I'm from Montello.
Oh, Montello. I'm sorry. A little typo here.
Yeah, that's fine. I believe that they should get rid of the $3.5 trillion and not even the $1.2 or whatever they want to do, completely throw it out because there's too many social programs in it. There's only 6% that is truly for infrastructure. And as far as the debt ceiling, let the Democrats vote on it themselves. They don't need the Republicans. Let them be the ones that change the debt ceiling and turn this country into a disaster.
John, thanks for the call. John, saying what a lot of Republicans in the Senate are saying, let the Democrats do that debt ceiling vote on their own, and probably it'll come up around election time, as it sometimes does.
Absolutely. That's what has been at the heart of this. Democrats, say this should be a bipartisan vote because they don't want Democrats, or they don't want Republicans running attack ads saying, look, Democrats raise the debt limit. In recent days, we've seen some pushback, though, from Democrats pointing out that actually to raise the debt limit, it's doing so to cover costs incurred under, you know, under the previous administration. Only a small fraction of that would be the spending that has happened so far since Biden took over. So their argument is, you know, this is a bipartisan, the debt was incurred in a bipartisan manner, so we should raise the debt limit in a bipartisan manner.
And then that 6% number, that's something that's bounced around for a while. Fact checks point out that's specifically the roads and bridges part of it, but there's lots of other infrastructure elements in it, like internet, for example, rail and things like that. And then there's the debate over some of the social things, so-called human infrastructure. What do you see over that argument over how much of the infrastructure bill actually is infrastructure?
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of pushback on the numbers for that, and that's because you know, Democrats have tried to take a very loose and broad use of the word infrastructure, but they believe that you need the sort of human element to make everything work. We're, you know, an increasingly a service-based economy, and therefore we need to invest in the people as well. You know, Republicans supported the infrastructure bill, the $1.2 trillion bill that did pass the Senate with 19 Republican votes. So there's a lot more bipartisan support for that. And that is much more the traditional roads, bridges, internet, broadband. And so I think, you know, we're seeing a divide in support. There's that one clearly garners some bipartisan support because, you know, everyone's got roads and bridges at home in their district or in their state that they want repaired and upgraded. Human infrastructure, this is clearly a Democratic priority and filled with Democratic priorities, and it is likely not going to get any Republican support.
Thanks a lot for that call from Montello. We'll go now to Ivy in Evansville. Ivy, hello.
Hi, yes, I am all for the $3.5 trillion, and I think we need to invest in our future, and I see that the things that are listed in that bill as investing in our future and caring for people. I mean, there are so many unforeseen costs, like to burning coal, like asthma and health, and to the economy, like, and fisheries. Look at what's happened in California. Who bears the cost of that? And when you see companies like Exxon not paying any taxes whatsoever, that's what's going to pay for this. And people like Jeff Bezos, who take tax deductions for their kids, they don't pay hardly anything. And we need to invest now in our elderly and our young people. How can, I mean, Medicare does not pay for dental care. How does an elderly person eat without teeth? What about hearing? And, you know, it's just, why is it called welfare when it helps people who don't make a lot of money but contribute all the time to society? And it's not welfare when corporations benefit from roads and bridges so they can ship their materials and don't pay any taxes.
Ivy, thanks for the call. A lot of what Ivy said here echoes what we're hearing from the Biden administration, saying think of this as not spending but investment. Lauren, is that what we're hearing?
And that is exactly what we're hearing. Yeah, I think she did a really nice job of summing up the administration's talking points, actually, because they are getting out there and they're saying that, yeah, this is about our future. Biden made a really interesting case yesterday. He talked a lot about China, and he said, look, China's really investing in their infrastructure, both, you know, their hard roads, bridges, hard infrastructure, and their human infrastructure. And we, you know, we want to keep pace. We want to keep our edge is the word he used. So he made a really sort of a big picture appeal. Like we, you know, we want to compete with China, and this is what we need to do to stay in that is to stay in that race. And so I think we're going to hear a lot more about that in the coming days, especially as the president travels around the country to make the case for his agenda. And that's exactly what they're saying. And they're all obviously saying that we need to tax the wealthy, tax big corporations and the wealthiest Americans in order to pay for this type of investment.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller before we move on. Leo is with us in Milton. Leo, hi.
Hi. So I'm just calling about to talk about the infrastructure bill. I'm still in high school. I'm a young person. And seeing this bill and just seeing some of the, you know, comments or opinions, I think this like idea of infrastructure has changed and evolved a lot. I think it does encompass more of like the Wi-Fi and social services than just like roads and bridges, like what's being said. So I think it's not fair to just say things like this that aren't infrastructure when like everyone needs them.
Gotcha. Leo, thanks for the call. Wrapping up this topic before moving on to something else, Lauren, a timeline on the kind of investments in these projects that Leo's talking about.
Well, we've got to have the vote first. So I think the Democrats are hoping to get to wrap this up and pass an agenda. Not sure how big it will be, but by the end of the month, that's sort of their new deadline. So we'll see if that happens. And then obviously actually, you know, getting to work and starting some of these projects will be the next big phase. And that, you know, could possibly take years to really start getting, you know, the shovels in the ground, as they say. But, you know, it's got to start with the vote. So we have to see if they actually are able to pass this and find all the support from the Democrats that they need.
Leo, thanks for that call. Lauren, in our last couple of minutes, you reported on the group Emily's List, supporting generally Democrats. They have a big focus on abortion politics for the next couple of years. What kind of things did you hear?
Yeah, so I spoke to their new president, and, you know, they only back pro-choice candidates, so candidates who support abortion rights. And they think that it's going to be a major issue, not just for Democrats, but also but broadly for women across the country. They are betting that women are going to be very upset with these efforts in Republican legislatures and possibly at the Supreme Court level to roll back abortion rights, to make it harder to get an abortion. We saw in Texas, there was, the most strict abortion law in the country has almost entirely eliminated abortions in the state. So Democrats and Democratic candidates are betting that this will be a political winner for them, that women, even if they're independent or maybe Republican leaning, will think, you know what, this has gone too far. In the past, though, we have seen abortion be actually more of an energizing issue for the right. Typically, you know, the anti-abortion movement gets really excited about the opportunity to elect anti-abortion pro-life candidates. So I think there is going to be a big question about which side excites more. And, you know, I think we'll learn a lot about, there's been a lot of polling on where the country is on abortion. And I think now this election might actually test that. You know, is this really a pro-choice country? You know, do majorities really support Roe? We might have a better sense of that as the election, 2022 elections approach.
Lauren, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Lauren Gambino, political correspondent for The Guardian US, with us for our weekly look at the top stories in the nation's capital.